Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Green 19 podcast. I'm Dominique Yates. I'm joined by Ryan Wood and Tom Silverstein. The day after the NFL cutdown day, it was a busy day and it was a long day. So we wanted to regroup on this Monday just to kind of talk about everything that kind of transpired throughout the long day that we had from the cutdown day. And, you know, we could start and going from Josh Jacobs, and we could talk about some of the surprises that might have happened, because, you know, we had a very hour-long discussion about predictions, and I'll give you guys credit. You were pretty close. We maybe, what, 50 players, right? I'll give you a chance to brag a little bit. So I think you guys did pretty well. So how did it feel?
My biggest miss was I had Darian Kennard over Travis Glover. I think that's – and I'm not giving ourselves Josh Jacobs as a miss, because I don't think any of us were all that confident that he'd be on the exempt list, that it was a possibility, but there was some surprise there too. So I would say for me, I don't know about you, Spoon. For me, my biggest miss was I had Darian Kennard over Travis Glover.
The Josh Jacobs thing totally caught me by surprise, because I hadn't considered that exempt list. And, you know, I still think we can get into that more. I'll give you my opinion on that when we get to that. But as far as the 53, I thought there was a chance Nigel Kelly was going to make it. I would have been wrong there. You know, I felt strongly about Donovan Jennings, and he made it. I wasn't sure about Sturdivant, but I just didn't think there was any way they could cut him. I just really didn't. I think we all felt that way, that that was a move they had to make. And keeping just four edges was a little bit of a surprise. I wasn't certain that they would go that thin there, but I assume, you know, they'll bring Kelly back if they can. And then Oliver's on IR. So we kind of talked about that too in the podcast, that Oliver would go on IR. I think that's about it.
Yeah. So there was a few things that stood out to me too. And I don't know, for some reason, I was a big Anthony Campbell guy. You know, I was kind of
just both going were. On and on. I wasn't as high on him.
Yeah. Did you eventually come around on that, Spoon, or by the end?
Well, it really kind of depended. Once they saw they were only going to keep four edges, then I figured it was because they were keeping an extra D tackle. So, you know, I thought he was borderline. I mean, you guys were higher on him than I was, but they obviously liked what they saw. And so
there just came a point about midway through camp where, to me, I looked at Anthony Campbell, how he profiled with the size, the athletic upside, and the way he was flashing. And it registered, like, I've seen this before. Brian Gutekunst usually keeps that guy. If he's got size, if he has athletic potential, he'll stash him on the 53. Gosh, the names are escaping me, but he's done this in the past. And they don't always pan out. It's not like they always lead to production, even for the Packers, but he'll give it a look-see for a year. And instead of exposing the guy to the wires, and Anthony Campbell just seemed to fit that mold to me.
Yeah, I thought it kind of came down to Kelly or Campbell, and because they're similar guys, they're very young. You know, Campbell doesn't have a ton of experience. You know, he didn't put up big numbers at Miami. Kelly is like 21 years old. You know, so I thought that they would go one or the other. And I just figured an edge was going to be more important, but, you know, I don't begrudge them for keeping him, because he certainly did have a good camp.
Yeah, it was interesting, because, like, I had made the comment and the joke, I thought I might have just been drinking the preseason Kool-Aid, because everyone looks good, you could say, during this time of year. So it's like, okay, you know, just because the guy has a big performance or a big game here and there, it doesn't mean that they're ready for the 53-man roster and vice versa, because, you know, as you know, you're not playing a lot of NFL guys sometimes on these teams during preseason. So, but I just kept watching him, the batted down balls, how aggressive he was. I'm like, maybe there's just something there.
Well, that's what J. Michael Sturdivant was to me. Because so Anthony Campbell, for me, it's not like he was 100% on, you know, but I thought it was something like 75% to 80%. Like, I thought it was a very strong chance because he had the size. If he's not a defensive tackle, because Brian Gutekunst, just like Ted Thompson, they've both always said they like – it's a big man's game. So if they have size, they're more likely to keep that. J. Michael Sturdivant was a guy that a week ago – I don't know about you, Spoon. He was not remotely on my 53 radar. Not because he lacked talent. He's, what, 6'3", 207, ran a 4.4 flat. Very talented guy. We just hadn't really seen it translate. He had two very quiet preseason games. And if you're in that position that he's in and you have quiet preseason games, you're pretty easy to sneak through through the waiver wire to the practice squad. He was not at all on my 53 radar. And then he blows up against Arizona. And all of a sudden the numbers are matching. And not just the numbers, but the kind of plays that he was making. Spoon, you alluded to that after the game. The savvy that it takes to kind of feign a block and go down the sideline and get wide open on a touchdown, putting the whole package together like that reminded me so much of seeing Emmanuel Wilson in 2023. It's the only other time I felt that way, where like, hey, this guy came out of nowhere and all of a sudden, like, he's telling you he's an NFL player with actual upside. You guys saw me after the game. I was really having to put up the 53. I was really racking my brain on what to do, because even going into that game, I didn't have him very high on my 53 radar. That was it was something more than a flash in the pan. You know, he kind of you checked his profile out. He had all the kind of things you need to get onto a 53 as a UDFA. And so I put him on, but I wasn't exactly confident, and good for him. You know, he did what he needed to do. It's quite a mic drop to finish the season. Or the preseason, but I love how our pod has started, because every other cutdown day, there's all kinds of fascinating pieces to the puzzle. It's always very interesting to see the culmination of camp and how that manifests in a list of 53 players, right? From 91 to 53. And yet, guys, Josh Jacobs is on the exempt list. This was not a normal cutdown day.
Yeah, so let's take it from there, which – you know, I'm sure the Google searches in Wisconsin for commissioner's exempt list were at an all-time high, because, you know, it's not just a yearly thing, right? It's not something that always happens, if you will. And it happened a couple times yesterday. So, again, it was really fascinating. And then you throw it in for Josh Jacobs. So, essentially, it's paid leave, you could say. But I want to hear from you, Spoon, just to kind of some of the nuts and bolts of this, if you will, and, you know, some of the – you know, restrictions, but what he is allowed to do. Can you kind of explain some of that for us?
Yeah. So the commissioner's exempt list is something that's been around for decades, but it hasn't been used a lot. And I think they started to use it when guys were, they thought, okay, here's guys who's committed serious allegedly committed serious offenses, and their court cases were going to be way off. And the league, through its research, felt like, well, this isn't quite right. We need to do something. And, you know, I think from a collective bargaining standpoint, they either had to suspend them or figure out something that would allow them to do it that wouldn't violate the CBA. And that was for the commissioner to not have to pay or to pay them, but not allow them to play. And it wasn't, you know, it's been part of the CBA that they can do that. So bottom line is, you know, he can't play, he can't practice, he can be around the team, he can go to meetings, he can get medical attention. But he's in limbo because the commissioner can decide when to take him off of it. Now, my pet theory on this is that they did it because they knew the Packers were getting close to cutdown day. They hadn't made a decision quite yet on whether they were going to suspend him or what how long they were going to suspend him. So by putting him on the list, they allowed the Packers to not have to put him on the 53 and waste a position, because I think in the next 2 weeks they're going to suspend him. That's my pet theory, is that before week one, we'll find out that he's suspended for six games or something like that. And then, you know, he can appeal it and whatever. But for the very moment, I don't think they wanted to punish the Packers by making them carry him on the 53. And he doesn't count on the 53 on the commissioner's list. They allowed them to go out and get another running back and keep him on the list. So we'll see if that's the case. That's kind of how I see it.
Yeah. Ryan, do you have any, you know, thoughts or feelings on it?
Yeah, the scenario you laid out, Spoon, is very possible. I would just caution by saying we have no idea. Because when you're on the exempt list, only Roger Goodell can put you on the exempt list and only Roger Goodell can take you off. I think the most important word is indefinite. There's no time frame. It can be 2 weeks. It can be the season. There's the NFL, Roger Goodell can do whatever he chooses to do there. And because it is indefinite, I think it's very hard to know exactly how that's going to go in terms of a timeline. Obviously, Josh Jacobs' next court appearance is November 17th. That's a long way away. We were just talking a couple of days ago about how the NFL is likely to let the legal process play out. If they allow the legal process to play out before coming down with a suspension, which the difference, of course, is a suspension, Josh Jacobs all of a sudden is not getting paid. That's a long time. Or it could be a short amount of time if they feel like they have a good hold of what the situation is enough to levy out an unpaid punishment. I find it very interesting. You know, the ticking bomb out there is that there is video surveillance part of the evidence. Right now it's private. No one's seen it except behind closed doors. Of course, if that gets released, and oftentimes it does to the public, this becomes a very different thing. Just the way that the world works. When we, the public, put eyes on a video, it is much more visceral than hearing about it in a police report. That's been the historical precedent. The NFL knows that the video is out there. Does the NFL have the video? Has it seen the video or not? But they're very aware that the video is out there. They're very aware of the possibility of it leaking. So to put Josh Jacobs on the exempt list is a way to kind of get ahead of any backlash because, hey, they've done something. Now it's an administrative thing, not actually a punishment. But, of course, there is punishment there because the Packers are going to be without Josh Jacobs for some time. We don't know how much time, but for some time. It's obviously a reaction to the two misdemeanors that Josh Jacobs was charged with. It comes right on the wings of that. I don't know how long it's going to be. And that was my first thought, trying to grow, because anytime a move like this, whether it's the exempt list or a suspension, comes out, the timeline is what we all think of. And when the timeline is indefinite, that really throws the mind for a spin. We don't know how much time this is going to be. The Packers might have a better idea, but I'm not sure that they do. This is going to be very interesting to see what happens next.
So when you kind of move to the football side of it, it was one of those situations. The Packers could not go through yesterday, you would say, without making sure they had a running back. So they went and picked up Caleb Johnson, who was with the Steelers, and a guy, what, he played college ball at Iowa, I believe, and you know, he has some good moments, obviously. He was a, you know, talented player, but just really couldn't find his footing when he was with the Steelers. So, I don't know, Spoon, when you look at the state of this running back room with now Caleb Johnson, Chris Brooks, Marshawn Lloyd, you know, just what are your feelings on it now that you saw just a small dose of Marshawn through preseason and camp and plus what Brooks does, just, you know, feelings on that running back room?
Yeah, I'll address that. I did want to add one more thing about Jake.
Please do. Please do.
If that video is disturbing, do they cut him?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, for all the, verbiage and stuff they put out there about being anti-domestic violence, if it's, obvious that he did that, do you stick with him? I mean, from a moral standpoint.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know that I would, but it's kind of hypocritical if you do. You're obviously, Seattle's made it clear that they don't give a damn about anybody's actions by signing Terrion Arnold, he's not, we don't know, he hasn't been, tried in a court of law, but there's a lot of evidence there. And, there's guys who've been involved in domestic violence and teams turn their heads or close their eyes on it. So, okay, that I just wanted to say that about Josh Jacobs. As for Caleb Johnson, very prolific runner at Iowa, played behind a really good offensive line. And if you watch his tape, he's running through gaping holes. But he does have good speed. He's a power guy. He got in a doghouse in Pittsburgh really quickly. I don't know if there was some special teams play where he let a ball bounce into the end zone on kickoffs. Yep.
Was that him last year? Was that him?
Bonehead play, yeah.
That was him. Yeah, that was him.
That was not good.
I think Pittsburgh, he got him in Mike Tomlin's doghouse. And then this year, for whatever reason, he couldn't beat out Lou Nichols. Lou Nichols got cut. But, he couldn't crack the top three of the Steelers running backs. And I'm pretty sure he was going to get cut. I don't know that for a fact, but, the Packers gave up a sixth round pick in 2028. And essentially that's if it's a year later, then it's a seventh round pick. So it's equivalent of giving up a seventh round pick for him. And they gave up the worst of the 2 6 that they got because they had gotten one from Miami for Kyle McCord, and that's going to be a much higher pick than you would assume than what the Packers' sixth-round pick was going to be. So they didn't give up a ton for him, which tells me he was probably going to be cut. Mm-hmm. It's worth it. It's worth a try, but they do not have a proven commodity at running back. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they're looking for somebody – as we speak during the waiver cutdowns or once waivers clear. But right now Marshawn Lloyd is your number one back, and there's a lot of guys, a lot of people in the Packers organization who are knocking on wood right now and hoping that Marshawn Lloyd stays healthy. And then even if he does, we don't know that he's a 1,000-yard rusher or a bell cow or whatever. We don't know anything about Marshawn Lloyd. So, that's a huge blow to the Packers' chances this year.
Spoon, to answer your question on Josh Jacobs and whether or not he eventually gets released, which right now the Packers are, Matt LaFleur said after the game against the Cardinals, he fully anticipates Josh Jacobs being part of the team, which is a way to say they're not cutting him as of this moment. I think that most likely hinges on whether or not the video is released to the public and whether or not that video is disturbing. Because if it does, and if it is, the chances of him getting released go up exponentially. Does it not? But
yeah, I mean, I think through freedom of information, it will have to come out, I believe. I need to double check that with some reporters that I know, but that wouldn't happen until the trial's over and, there's a verdict. So, that's going to be, his hearing is November 17th. He could go in there and plead no contest and, they do a plea deal, or it goes to trial and then we don't see that video until next year sometime. So that could be the case. If we can't see it, I don't know. Or if he admits to something in court, then we'd have to, they'd have to make a decision about that.
Conversely, if that video doesn't see the light of day until at the very earliest after the 2026 season. I think the chances are quite high that they won't release him. That's just the way that these things work. Importantly, with the exempt list, the NFL could, let's say, worst case scenario for the Packers, right? The league lets the legal process play out. It means that he's on the exempt list through the middle of November. They could tack on punishment after, but they could also backlog the punishment. Let's say he comes off week four. They could say it's a six-game suspension. You've already served four of those games, and you're going to be available week seven. But once you're available week seven, four games, you're not going to get paid. You're going to play without pay because you were paid four games while on the exempt list. So they can backload the punishment, or they can tack it on. Like that, and that's where when I say Roger Goodell can do literally whatever he wants here, he can. It's up to him. He can. There's no restraints on what he ultimately decides to do in this matter. So it could go either way. We really don't know. As far as the football side of it, it's been very clear throughout the offseason that Brian Gutekunst preferred to go with youth over veteran experience at running back, because for the past 3 months, if he was preferring to put a veteran on, there was plenty of veterans that he could have put on the roster. He never did so. He waited until the very end, found a young guy, second year running back, guy that just turned 23 years old in August, this August, to pair with Marshawn Lloyd. Caleb Johnson is 6'1", 224, ran a 4.57. He's a power guy that you can pair with the slashing run style, the burst of Marshawn Lloyd. There's a complementary traits in the two. Both guys are talented. I mean, Caleb Johnson rushed for over 1,500 yards and 21 touchdowns as a junior at Iowa before going out and getting drafted in the third round. He is very talented, just like Marshawn Lloyd is very talented. And to your point, neither of them are proven at all at this level. Caleb Johnson got drafted into a backfield last year that had Jaylen Warren and Kenny Gainwell. When Kenny Gainwell signed with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, instead of elevating Caleb Johnson on their roster, the Steelers replaced Kenny Gainwell with Rico Dowdle. So he was never higher than their third running back. He was buried on that depth chart. He wasn't going to play. There was no path to the field. And now suddenly there is clearly a path to the field in this Packers backfield. So we'll see what he can do, just the way that we can see what Marshawn Lloyd can do. And there's a lot of questions for both, but both guys are talented. And Brian Gutekunst wanted to go with youth at a position that ages quicker and harsher than any other position in the game. And that's running back.
It's going to be tough. It's going to be very tough because, like you said, with Marshawn Lloyd, I mean, have we even seen him like have a 15 to 20 carry game? Like, have we watched him play a four quarter game?
Yeah, 10 just carries so in 2 years.
10 carries in 2 years. So, like, there's so much there that we just don't know. And then again, with Chris Brooks from a running perspective, like, it's just not going to change a game. And like I said, maybe there's potential there with Caleb Johnson, but there's so much there that we don't know. So, what Matt LaFleur made the comment, they're going to let Jordan Love cook. He better do it to start the season, because right now I don't know if you can trust to put the ball in Marshawn Lloyd's hands 20 times and think that you'll be able to have some success. You know,
there's one thing that LaFleur can do, and I suspect that he will, is he could start to put Sky Moore, Savion Williams when he comes back from IR, Jaden Reed, put them in the backfield, do kind of sweeps and things like that with them. Find ways to incorporate them into the running game so that he doesn't have to rely. I mean, I think it's going to be very much be a committee type thing, and they go at it in as many different ways as they can.
Yeah, make Tucker Kraft a running back. That might work.
You know, Spooner becomes, I think it was already to us very curious, the preseason usage that Marshawn Lloyd had in terms of what he might have had like six carries in Pittsburgh, and he had six carries in Denver. Maybe it's four carries. I think he might have had like 10 carries in the preseason, right around that number, right? And then they shut him down for Arizona. And this is a guy, again, we've talked about the tricky balance that they've had to kind of toe with keeping him healthy, which they did. He's gotten healthy. He stayed healthy through the preseason. But also there's the element of he has not played in 2 years, and he looks like it at times. For all the talent, and his touchdown catch in Denver was impressive. For all that talent, you watch him run between the tackles and the vision and timing. There's, as Adam Sinovich said himself, a day after that game in Denver, there was a lot of rust there. And they didn't do much to knock off that rust. They clearly erred on the side of keep Marshawn Lloyd healthy. But if he's going to have to be your bell cow, which he kind of does at this point, there wasn't a lot of ramp up to actually get him ready to be in that role. And knowing that Josh Jacobs is going to miss some time, I wonder if they end up regretting that. I wonder if they, in hindsight, would have been better served to play him more and to knock off that rust more, even if you're exposing him to a higher possibility of getting injured, because he's got to be ready to play. He can't, it's not just enough for him to be healthy. He has to be ready to play.
Conspiracy theorists might say that they found out about Josh Jacobs' situation on Friday night, and that's why Marshawn Lloyd took part in warmups and was supposed to play, and then all of a sudden didn't. So,
but is that a mistake?
Because you could not afford to lose him.
You can't afford to not have him ready to play. And I'm not sure that Tim Kaepernick's going to do it.
You got to have a body there. I get it.
But you got to have a body that knows how to run between the tackles and that can actually carry the ball for at least 10 times in a game. He's got to at least have double-digit carries in Minnesota.
If you're the Packers, you don't want to put him in the game, you know, and he's running behind Josh Geske and he takes a blast, you know, a missed block or something. I don't mean to disparage Josh Geske, but, you know, you don't want
him released.
Crushed, you know, and then you lose him. So anyway, if I'm the Packers, that's how I would be thinking about it. Anyway.
I'm not advocating for putting him behind Josh Geske and Dylan Barrett and Dalton Cooper and, hey, go run, kid. You could have played your top line a little bit more. You could have given the running game a little bit more of a ramp. And you could have, you know, I go back to Ben Sermon's at the very beginning of the offseason, where it was much more unclear if Marshawn Lloyd could do what he's done to this point, and that's actually stayed healthy. And the decision of, do you play him? Do you rest him? Do you preserve him? What do you do? And Ben Sermon's was like, you got to play him because we have to know he can actually do this. Do the Packers know that he can actually do this at this point? I don't think they've had enough.
No, they're going to have to do it by. They're going to have to do it by progression. He's going to have to get better on the job.
Yeah. So Jordan Love Cook segment of the fan base is careful what you wish for, because yes, I think this passing game is in pretty good shape. But it's also a Matt LaFleur offense that's predicated on the run game, because the passing game is predicated on the play action pass. And I don't know that they have a running game. Like, it's just, who knows? Maybe Marshawn Lloyd gets 15 carries, goes for 86 yards, and gets a touchdown in Minnesota. That could happen. I just don't know that we're all kind of sitting there waiting for that to happen week one. It's going to be a lot of trial and error.
Oh, yeah, no question about it. I mean, I would be surprised if he had 86 yards and just ran up and down the field. Because, I mean, again, it's week one. He hasn't played a lot of ball. Just like with Trey Smack, you wouldn't be shocked if he struggled. It's going to be still a new guy figuring it out as he goes. So maybe, I guess they feel good about the workload he had in camp and in practice. So maybe they saw enough in those workouts that they said, okay, let's just now, he kind of passed the test we wanted to see. So let's just make sure he can make it to week one. It feels like that's just what they did there with Marshawn Lloyd.
Who's more likely to get 15 carries week one, Marshawn Lloyd or Caleb Johnson?
I don't know if anybody's going to get 15.
I don't think they will, but if a high number, but it'll be Lloyd.
Who's more likely in your mind? Let's say 12, whatever it is. Who the leading rusher?
It depends on what the defense does. That was a Matt LaFleur answer, right?
Yeah.
This is my point. We don't know.
I just don't see anybody getting 15, but I'll say Lloyd. Here's what I think will happen with Marshawn Lloyd. He'll have 13 carries of 0, 1, 2, 3 yards, and he'll have one or two carries of 20 or more. You know, he's going to break off a run at some point, and, you know, his stats will look halfway decent, but he's going to have like 10 really mediocre runs is the way I kind of figure it's going to happen. So we'll see if that's the case, but I think Caleb Johnson will get a good share of carries too.
How much does the current makeup that we know right now, as of now, of this Packers backfield, the running backs, how much does that move the needle on your expectations for the Packers offense and for the Packers as a whole this season compared to not having compared to possibly having Josh Jacobs?
A lot. Yeah. You got to have a back. You got to have a back that can be a threat. You know, one thing in Minnesota that they might do is play Chris Brooks a ton, because with all the blitzing that, you know, Brian Flores does, you better have somebody who knows how to pick up blitzes, and even in the run game. So we might see Chris Brooks with, you know, Sky Moore or Jaden Reed or whatever in the backfield, and they're doing stuff like that. I bet you Chris Brooks ends up with more snaps than any of the other running backs.
Spoon, when you do your 1 to 53 rankings for week one, which is one of my absolute favorite things that you do all year, I always just pour over that. Thanks. I think it's fascinating. Are you going to include Josh Jacobs in that 1 to 53? Is it going to be a 1 to 54? And I hate to put you on the spot. I know it's you don't just spitball something like that. But, like, where – in terms of, like, guys that are most irreplaceable, starting with, obviously, Jordan Love, Micah Parsons – where's Josh Jacobs on that list? What range is he in?
Well, part of it has to do with the position, because I do believe that you can always find a running back. They're probably the easiest position to replace. Josh Jacobs, my calculation on that is also affected by last year with all the injuries and whether he's – you know, starting to kind of tear apart a little bit physically. So I would say from irreplaceability, he's in the top 10. He's in the top 7, 5, something like that. I mean, you can't lose Jordan Morgan. I think that's a huge loss. You can't lose – I don't think it hurts – to lose Devontae Wyatt. I think that's a really critical one. Brandon Cisse, maybe.
More or less than Tucker Kraft?
Oh, less than Tucker Kraft's probably right there at 3 after Parsons, Love. Yeah, I would say.
Absolutely. So let's talk a little bit about quarterback. Kyle McCord, that was the news of the day. That kind of started the news, really, before the exemption list with Jacobs and some other news that happened that we'll talk about. But, you know, when you look at it from the Packers' perspective, and I talked with our esteemed colleague Pete Doherty about this last night, the Packers, after what Kyle McCord did, you could say in preseason, he probably wasn't going to be available if they cut him. And they were pretty adamant that they liked Tyrod Taylor. They said, we brought him here for a reason. That was Brian Gutekunst's words. And they said they were happy with him. So in terms of how the Packers would look at it, it would be a win-win. They get a draft pick in the process because they traded off Kyle McCord. So I'll start with you, Spoon. Just, you know, just your kind of feelings on that trade, how it transpired. Or do you feel like maybe they should have kept McCord?
So, after thinking about it for a while, I thought there was a chance they'd keep him. But I also knew that they have a whole training camp worth of evaluation on him, and it's possible that they didn't see him as good as he played on Friday night. You know, that maybe when teams blitz him, or maybe he doesn't read coverages as well. I mean, that was a pretty basic coverage. He played great. You know, there's no getting around that. They were totally locked in on Tyrod Taylor. So it was either keep him or trade him. And what I'm thinking is that they either hoodwinked Miami into thinking that there were other suitors for him, because Miami's really high on the waiver claim list. I forget. I mean, I don't know. Where did they pick in the draft, Miami? Did they have a first-round pick? I can't remember, but they must be in the top five worst records in the league, right? I can't remember what they finished. But they have to be fairly high on the waiver claim list. So to get a sixth out of them, they must have convinced them that someone else was going to pick him up, so they didn't have to cut him. Now, it was a 2028 sixth, so that's essentially a seventh. So they didn't get a ton for him. My guess is that they didn't think that highly of him. Otherwise, you know, I think they would have kept him.
Yeah.
Ryan. I'm going to go the other way. I think that at this point, the Packers organizationally have to have a high level of confidence in Matt LaFleur's ability to groom quarterbacks. You've obviously seen it with Jordan Love. You've seen it with Malik Willis. And now you've seen it with Kyle McCord. And not to say those guys are all the same, obviously. But Kyle McCord took a huge step this preseason compared to what he did as a rookie last year in Philadelphia, where he didn't complete half of his passes. This preseason, he's got a plus 100 passer rating. And if history tells you this head coach is something of a quarterback savant, which I think it does, you have to believe that he's capable of going out and finding the next young guy and grooming him too, which makes you a whole lot more comfortable with letting go of a guy at that position that shows real positive signs. I thought Kyle McCord went from most of camp, he looked to be a guy that was showing positive development and that had a chance one day to be a QB2, to what he did against the Cardinals was a guy who's ready right now to be a QB2. Now, it was great timing, because who knows if that was the second preseason game and then he goes out to play a third and maybe he gets all that game. Who knows if he would have shown some steps back. He might have. So the last sample size of this preseason, he goes out and does that, and then you don't see him again. There's teams that are going to evaluate him on, hey, he could be the QB2 right now. Miami obviously being one of them. But from the Packers standpoint, would their perfect world have been to put Kyle McCord on the practice squad, let him further develop in this offense for another year, and then be QB2 next year if Tyrod Taylor, if and when he retires? Yeah, that would have been the perfect world. But something short of that is, hey, the Packers believe that Matt LaFleur can go get another guy and do with him what he did with Jordan Love, Malik Willis, Kyle McCord, and really just groom the guy into an asset. I think they believe that'll happen. So I think that's kind of the backdrop of trading him now.
Yeah, and I think if they were really set on him, like if they really thought he had starter potential later in his career, you know, why wouldn't you keep him over John Williams or Travis Glover or even Josh Wiley? You know, I mean, if you thought that highly of him, you would do that. I think they also look at next year supposed to be the greatest draft in quarterback history. You know, we'll see how the college goes, and they're not going to use one of their top picks to take a quarterback, but maybe they feel like there will be options in the fourth, fifth, sixth round that they can take a guy and then groom him. So I think all those things factored in.
And then put that guy with Matt LaFleur and you're in a good shape again, right? That's the luxury of having a guy that can develop quarterbacks like this. Is a lot of teams, most teams, you don't have that guy. You get a chance at somebody, you better hold on to him because you don't know where your next chance will come. Here, it might be next year.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, guys, I want to take a minute and talk about the biggest news, really, that came out of the LA Rams organization. and that's Mark Redmond, the tight end, is a Green Bay Packer. I'm sorry. I couldn't resist. I'm so sorry. But anyways, you know, the Packers needed some depth desperately at tight end. And this weekend, they started with Jonnu Smith, and they brought in Mark Redmond to go along with Tucker Kraft and Josh Whiteley. So, you know, Redmond, it's who knows, right? I mean, he had some success playing college ball. But at least you have a proven guy in Jonnu Smith plus Kraft. I don't know. What do you kind of make of the tight end room right now?
To your reference, and you're referring to the Rams signing Aaron or getting Aaron Donald to come back. I like maybe that's why the Packers went with 10 linemen, because they're going to line up seven of them when they play the Rams. You know, because Myles Garrett and Aaron Donald oh my God. I don't know how
good luck
block those guys. That is gonna You're be not. Something to watch. Yes. You know, I'm really I'm gonna be watching every Rams game, have it on tape and be watching it because it's gonna be amazing. But Redmond, I watched a little bit of tape on him, and he's just a big old blocking dude. You know, he's the guy they haven't had. And sort of what they kind of hoped Fitzpatrick was, you know, last year, and thought they could develop. But he's not going to hurt you in the passing game, but he can run block. So there you go. That was it. They don't have a true run blocker. I mean, Tucker Kraft can run block, can do everything. We know that. Jonnu Smith cannot block. He is not a blocking tight end. He's a spread out wing guy. This guy's more like an H-back. He can move a little bit, and then he can and line with his hand line up with his hand down. So that was pretty obvious.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, my biggest takeaway of cutdown day in terms of how the roster came together, and I wrote about this at Packers News, is Brian Gutekunst saw the holes too. I mean, ever since they opened camp, knowing Josh Jacobs was in legal trouble, and Luke Musgrave had a neck injury that puts his future into question. We don't know what's going to happen there.
Another guy who can't block too. So,
well, yeah. And I'll get to that. Yeah. But ever since that camp opened that way, we all looked at running back and tight end and thought the same thing. Oh, that's a problem. They don't have the numbers there. They're going to have to do something. And Brian Gutekunst scrambled at the very end, but he didn't rush because he gave it all to camp. There was a good week and a half that the Packers were openly auditioning Drake Dabney to be that depth tight end on their roster, and he never stood up and grabbed that. So what did Brian Gutekunst do at the very end? Obviously, we talked about running back, but at tight end, Jonnu Smith is Luke Musgrave, and Mark Redmond is John Fitzpatrick, and now they have four. They've got four guys, which is the number you want to keep at tight end. They haven't been here all offseason, so there's going to be some growing pains there. It's not going to click overnight, but he got the position to where it needs to be in terms of numbers, in terms of roles. Jonnu Smith's that move guy, and Mark Redmond's going to be the blocking special teamer. And, it was very apparent that Brian Gutekunst also looked at running back and tight end and thought, oh, that's a problem. Got to do something there.
Yeah. Now, as we kind of near the end, if you will, of this, you know, were there any other surprises? We talked about Anthony Campbell, J. Michael Sturdivant. You know, one guy we talked a lot about, Damani Jackson. You know, he was one of those toss-up when you looked at the DBs. You know, was there anything out there that maybe surprised you guys or stood out or anything that you saw outside of what we've already mentioned?
Not really. I mean, yeah. I wondered who they were going to pick between Jonathan Ford and Nazir Stackhouse, and they took Ford. But that was kind of obvious. They were starting Ford. They were playing him ahead of Stackhouse. I just wondered if Stackhouse had made a run in that last game. I thought he played okay. But no, not really. I think keeping 10 offensive linemen was a surprise to me. I didn't think they were going to keep 10. I thought they would go with 9. That they didn't need to keep all those guys. And I still think they may pick somebody up. And so I wouldn't bet $1 million that those 10 are the ones they'll go into the season with. But that's it.
Yeah, I had them at 9-2 on the offensive line. I would not say it was a surprise though, because I thought I made it very clear in my 53 projection. I have no idea. After those first seven, who were all locks on the offensive line, there was a bubble group of four, and I had zero feel for how that was going to go. They could have kept anywhere from 8 to 11, and I would have been like, well, that makes sense. Because when they don't know who's better there, they're going to keep more just to give it more time to figure that out. I don't think they had that figured out at cutdown day. So I think that's the reason why they ultimately kept 10. And John Williams, the best left tackle prospect of the bubble players, Donovan Jennings inside, Travis Glover, a guy that can play kind of both. You don't want him to play either, but he can play both. They covered all their bases by keeping 10. I think that was less of a surprise than just Brian Gutekunst throwing his hands up and saying, we'll see what happens. Jonathan Ford was playing ahead of Nazir Stackhouse, so that's why I had them keeping him. He does not overlap with Anthony Campbell. They're very different skill sets at defensive tackle, which is why I had him keep them both. Damani Jackson, we talked about it before cutdown day. Last 2 years, Brian Gutekunst has released at final cuts seventh-round corner Kalen King and seventh-round corner Micah Robinson. Releasing a sixth-round cornerback is really no different. So I think we all saw that coming. They're very light at edge rusher. And I can't imagine, you know, Colin Oliver on IR, I know he's designated return. That's a minimum four games. So if they stay stagnant there, you're looking at four games minimum of having four edge rushers. That can't be nearly ideal. That's not what they want to have happen. So could Brian Gutekunst be looking at some depth there in the next 2 weeks? That wouldn't surprise me. That's probably my biggest surprise is only having four edge rushers. They're also light at defensive back, five corners, four safeties. Now, there's some positional versatility there, right? Kamal Haddon and Ketan Oladapo can both play nickel. Obviously, Javon Bullard is a nickel. He can also play deep safety if something happens to Xavier McKinney and Evan Williams, two guys that played 900-plus snaps last year. So that can kind of help with those lighter numbers, the fact that you can move guys around there and kind of cover your bases that way. It's also 2023. They kept nine defensive backs. So it's not unprecedented. It's just light. So some of those things stood out to me. But the thing that didn't surprise us, I don't think, is they kept Matt Orsak over Kyle Adamidis, a long snapper. I think we all kind of saw that coming. The Packers are making a long play there. They're very high on Matt Orsak. So even though he took all of camp on PUP before finally being activated, he'll be good to go week one. And I think they're more comfortable with the veteran there.
You know, you talked about those edges. I can't help but ask, Spoon, how many Josh Sweat questions did you get on your blog yesterday?
A few, yeah.
Yeah. Right? Just, I guess, what would you say to
Aren't
him,
you shocked, Spoon? Aren't you shocked? Yeah.
I know. It's funny how many people reference reports out there, you know, that, oh, I heard they were going to trade a third-round pick for so-and-so. You know, I heard a report, or read a report, you know, and I'm just like, where did you see that?
Yeah.
Anyway. Probably on Reddit or something, you know. I don't know.
Exactly. Some anyway. Random TikToker or something. So as we wrap it up, I mean, Spoon, Ryan, any just final words, final thoughts, anything on your mind?
I'm out of thoughts.
Out of thoughts.
I'm just need zero thoughts remaining.
That's it. Well, hey, after what, 10 hours on a blog, you deserve to have zero thoughts.
No, I think this team is it's leaving the month of August where it entered the month of August. I think the things that we expected to be strengths look like strengths right now, starting with Jordan Love. The passing game, they're not lacking depth there. I mean, they, if not for Savion Williams' injury, they could have kept seven. They got guys around Jordan Love that make sense. And Tucker Kraft coming back from the knee injury the way he has is obviously one of the best things, maybe the best thing that happened in training camp for this team. The questions that we have, the offensive line, the run game, those are still questions. I don't know once the what I don't know is once the regular season starts, what wins out, the strengths or the weaknesses, the things that we know are really good or the things that we're still questioning. I don't know how that's going to go. with this team. So that's what I'll be watching for come week one, two, three, and on.
The only thing I'll be watching for and hoping I have is just better jokes. I was really proud of the Mark Redmond Rams joke, and I didn't get as good a reaction as I was hoping for, guys. So I'll be funnier next time. That's the only thing
I think it's.
I gave you an eye roll.
I think it's because I've only had one cup of coffee so far this morning, and Spoon spent ungodly hours on the live chat. So we're still, man, camp feels long. You know, I'm so much in favor of the current setup where it used to be final cuts were the Saturday before week one. Like, you just rolled right into the regular season. Thank you to whoever's responsible for giving us this week. It's nice. I'm looking forward to the week of I guess it's kind of a pseudo buy, and then we'll hit it hard week one.
Yeah. So in closing, thank you all for not only checking out this Green 19 podcast, but following along not only on Spoon's blog, but the tracker, all the content that we had from Cut Down Day. And we're obviously not done with it. They'll still have practice squad news, and Brian Gutekunst will be talking. Matt LaFleur, they'll be talking this week. So we'll have all that content on PackersNews.com as well as Journal Sentinel. So for Ryan Wood, Tom Silverstein, I'm Dominique.